Spellcaster Media presents.
Hello there, and welcome to episode 129 of the Creepy Kingdom Podcast. Podcast all about the creepiness and spookiness of films, theme parks, and beyond. I'm your host, Mr. James H. Carter II. Coming up in this episode, we are bringing to you day two of Midsummer Scream 2017. Day one was so jam-packed with things. Couldn't contain it all in one episode. We had to just chop it in half and do a whole other episode. So much fun stuff being covered, including the Halloween Horror Nights panel that for Halloween Horror Nights Hollywood that was given at this event on this day, day two, July 30th, 2017. Stay tuned for that. But before we get into that, just want to bring up a few things. We have some more information out there about the Creepy Tour. If you heard our last episode, which we went into explicit detail, Creepy Tour 2017 for Orlando. It's taking place this September 19th through the 26th. The tour includes Walt Disney World, Mickey's Not So Scary Halloween Party, Universal Orlando Resort, including Halloween Horror Nights and Spooky Days in the Park, the convention taking place at Coronado Springs, which includes screening of Foolish Mortals, us being the Creepy Kingdom Podcast, doing the podcast live for the very first time. It also includes a private party at the Tower of Terror. So much awesome stuff going on there. But what we got for you now is we have group rates and theme park tickets available. We partnered with Storybook Destinations to be able to get these rooms for the people that want to participate in the tour. We have all the pricing. It's up there at creepytour.com. You have until September 8th to do this, to book your rooms and get the discounted theme park tickets. So go to creepytour.com and check it out. If you are an Orlando local or you're already going to be in the area and you already have your accommodations and all that stuff, guess what, Creepy Kingdom listeners? You can still join us on the tour. There's no charge for that at all. We want to experience all these awesome, amazing events with our listeners. I mean, that's kind of what this is all about. That's what the Creepy Tour is all about. So, you know, reserve your spot on the tour. We can go on attractions together. Have meals together. Go through Halloween Horror Nights together. Just so we can do it all together. It'd be so much fun. Anyways, you have till September 15th to reserve a spot. So we have all that in order, which I think is more than, you know, the tour starts in a few days, you know, and it starts after that. So, but I mean, just reserve your spot now. Why not? Anyways, go to creepytour.com to get all the pricing and more details. Or you can email us, reserve your spots. It's ckcreepytour@gmail.com. So just wanted to give you guys an update on that, since our last episode had all this information about it, but we didn't have the pricing available yet. And now we do. One last thing before we start this show is you're going to want to keep an eye on our Patreon account. That's patreon.com/creepykingdom. because we are going to be putting out some perks that people had asked for. People have requested them. And I'm very excited. We've been trying to figure out how to get pull a few of these things off. But they're going to be coming to be very, very soon. Potentially before the next episode. But they're not quite ready yet, so I didn't want to announce them yet. But I just wanted to put that out there. Say, hey, guys. The things you asked for are coming. So get ready. And get ready for this episode as we bring to you Midsummer Scream 2017, Day 2. Howdy, folks. Howdy, folks. What is this, a cowboy podcast? No, this is a creepy podcast. Hey there, everybody. I am here with Shannon McGrew. Hello, Shannon.
Hello.
Shannon is the owner and editor-in-chief of NightmarishConjurings.com, a website that covers horror films and haunted attractions.
Far and wide.
And she has been a reluctant podcaster. She's been on the show mostly last Halloween season as we reviewed some of the Halloween attractions that we experienced.
Yep.
And she's also a brand new writer to Creepy Kingdom.
Woo!
As she'll be reviewing home video releases.
That is correct.
And your latest one just dropped.
It did. It was for Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2.
Volume 2.
Baby Groot is life.
Yeah, that's the tagline or the subtitle, whatever. But anyways, Shannon has joined me for this episode as we're going to cover Day 2 of Midsummer Scream. A few episodes back, we did Day 1. And there was so much information that I was like, man, this has got to be broken up into two episodes. A lot of stuff. I was joined by Josh Taylor. Shannon's shaking her head, which you can't see. So you have to verbalize your...
Sorry. Yes. There's a lot to cover.
Josh Taylor joined me for the episode. He helped me cover Day 1. Funny enough, Shannon did not help me cover Day 2. Shannon had to cover, had her own thing going on.
Yes.
For with Nightmarish Conjurings. I had help from little Nikki. You may know her as the social media ghoul for the Foolish Mortals social media accounts. She could not record, but I have some information from her. So her thoughts will be shared. And just to take a few steps back, if you're just chiming in and said, James, I didn't hear episode 1 or Day 1 of Midsummer Scream, I don't know what you're talking about. I tuned in for the creepy Disney stuff. What's going on here? I guess we should get a little feedback about Midsummer Scream and why we cover it on the show. So Midsummer Scream is a convention. This had its second year. It took place in Long Beach, California, July 29th and 30th, and is a celebration of all things Halloween. They call it a Halloween festival. It's got a little bit of things you would find in a horror convention, but the real emphasis on haunted attractions and the creepier side of theme parks. When you're done listening to this episode, of course, if you haven't listened to Day 1, you're going to go back and do that because Day 1, they had an amazing panel. It was a retrospective on the history of the Twilight Zone Tower of Terror, and we have that entire panel on that episode. So if you haven't heard that, it's right there waiting for you. But, last year Shannon actually helped me review year one of Midsummer Scream. We jammed that into one episode, but I feel like they have multiplied by
like threefolds.
Three, four times as much stuff. I would even go four.
Yeah.
There was so much stuff going on. And we had our own agendas all day covering all these many, 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 many things.
Yeah.
And so it was a little all over the place. But, you know, and I know that's like, oh, it's, you know, now that was almost a month ago at this point.
Yeah, almost.
But we're still we're still glowing high from it.
I'm still writing my stuff from it. Luckily, I had a writer that wrote a lot, but I have not written my side of things yet.
What have you been doing?
I don't know. You'd think that, like, I had nothing to do.
You should have hopped on. Oh, my God. You're just sitting around.
I know.
While everyone's waiting for you to read your review. So basically what you're saying is Creepy Kingdom's going to have your verbal reviews before Nightmarish Conjurings has your written reviews.
Well, Nightmarish Conjurings has a ton of reviews up there already.
From Midsummer. But not from you.
But not from me.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
I will be reviewing each of the mini haunts that were there.
Wow. That's a daunting task. We could start there. So they have a room. It's called the Hall of Shadows. I don't think we discussed that at all on day one on our last episode. So we can get into that a little bit. And it's... how many were there? 12?
10? There are 12.
There are 12 mini haunts. It's kind of like a sneak preview of the haunts that are coming to Southern California this Halloween season.
With a focus mostly on home haunts.
Really?
Well, I shouldn't say home haunts. I mean, they're not the type of haunts. They're not theme park haunts.
No, they're an individual.
They're individually owned haunts.
Yeah. And they're not necessarily just at homes.
They're not necessarily, because you have stuff like Mabel's 6 Feet Under, which is independently owned. And then you have other haunts that are more mom and pop, like, I can't pronounce it correctly, so I apologize, Opeshi Home Haunt.
I have no idea, so whatever you say.
So there's a wide variety between home haunts to independently owned and operated haunts, etc.
All right. I didn't go through too many of these. I do want to give a shout out to one of the ones I did, which is not really Creepy Kingdom friendly at all, but it's called Gorlesque. And they had... PG-13 version, I guess.
Yeah, they had one side that was PG-13 and one side that was R-rated.
Yeah. And, I mean, the PG-13 one was amusing, but the R-rated one...
was awesome.
Yeah. So, if you can use your imagination. It's, if you know, burlesque and gore. This is the second year they're doing their haunt. We went to it last year. Didn't cover it on the show. It's not really... It's a little bit out of the realm of most Creepy Kingdom. I mean, so if you're really into haunts, you might, you know, and you're into a little bit more extreme things, but I didn't think it was appropriate to cover on the show. But they're doing some pretty interesting stuff over there, that's for sure.
Yes.
Any other of the mini haunts that kind of stand out to you?
I mean, I thoroughly enjoyed Gorlesque. They always have something that's unlike anybody else that's there. I also love Mabel's 6 Feet Under. They're a great company, and they put on such a great, great haunt. I'm trying to think, what else did I go? Oh, there was a Lovecraftian themed one, but I'm not sure of the name of it. But if any
must
of
be new,
I'm not sure.
Oh.
But if any of your listeners are familiar with Lovecraft, you know, and they're in Southern California, this will definitely be a haunt to check out. You'll probably want to go to nightmarishconjurings.com when I release all of my reviews on the mini haunts, because I will have the name of it there. But, you know, Lovecraft fans will love it. Higgins Manor is always a good one. You know, they had a great group. Oh, the Bloodshed Brothers, Hyde Street Massacre. I love what they're doing. They are really talented. They had their first, I guess it was like a resurrected home haunt. They used to work with the
Haunted Stadium.
Haunted Stadium.
And these are very niche things for Southern California. We're getting some deep cuts here.
So anyways,
don't forget our listeners all over the country.
Sorry. So anyways, they separated, blah, blah, blah. So they had a home haunt last year. They're going to have another one this year. And their preview was fantastic.
Cool. I mean, it's like I said, I mean, you know, this is, you know, definitely, you know, the haunts that participate are Southern California based, but I like to cover it on the show because, I mean, well, most of the entertainment industry comes from Southern California, so it kind of stems out, but there's just, you know, I think it's an event worth traveling for.
Absolutely. You're into Halloween, if you're into horror, if you're into haunts, like, they have something for everybody.
And I mean, even if you're not into any of that stuff, but they always come through with the killer Disney panels. I mean, they just knock it out of the park. You know, like I said, they had the retrospective on Tower of Terror in the past. They've had, you know, the history of the Hatbox Ghost with Tony Baxter, you know, on that panel. You know, just... That, actually, that wasn't Midsummer Scream. Whatever. But it was the same people. We don't want to get into all that. But all I'm saying there is that the people that are involved with it, they are involved in the working in the theme park industry. So that's just a natural part. It all kind of – it's kind of just fans of just spooky entertainment, really.
Yeah.
You could sit there all day in the screaming room and just watch horror films. Horror shorts.
Oh, yeah, it's horror shorts.
They're all shorts, but still. Like,
and all different genres. Slashers, supernatural, possession, monsters.
Yeah, so before we move on, I just want to put this out there again and this into the universe and say that they really need to make this 3 days.
Absolutely.
You know, I think that's... I'm just going to put that out there. So, come on, guys.
Come on, Rick and Johanna and David and Claire. Do it.
What about Gary?
Oh, and Gary. I just cut that part out.
I'm not cutting anything out. I really want Gary to do it. But anyways, that's the team. That's the executive team. That's our screamer. All right, so... let's get to what was covered that day. What was the first thing that you did?
I barely remember what I did yesterday.
All right, I think you went to the Delusion retrospective.
I did go to the Delusion retrospective.
That was a rhetorical question because I already knew.
I don't know how many fans of immersive theater you have.
Well, I could say this. A Delusion is something that... the reputation of it is definitely fed over into the theme park fans. So, you can just kind of give a brief synopsis of what it is and then what this actual panel was covering.
Yeah. I mean, I only went last year when James and I moved here. I'm sure everybody now knows that James and I are together. Shocker.
Ruining my rep.
Of what?
Being the cool bachelor
anyways, ghost. it's just this really incredible immersive theater show. You're part of the play. Like, your actions result in the actions of the players around you. So it's really incredible. It's done by John Braver, and he was a stuntman for, like, years beforehand. So anyways, it's been something that's, like, Delusion's, like, legendary. And so this year, unfortunately, they will not be coming back for 2017, as they do have a VR experience, a virtual reality experience coming. They will be back in 2018, but the panel was a retrospective of every... Delusion show that they've had since, I believe it was 2011 they started. It was really cool, especially for somebody like me who has heard about Delusion but had never gone, and then finally going and then learning about the other shows that they've done since its inception. Neil Patrick Harris was a producer on one of them.
Really?
Yeah. He's really, like, all about haunts and immersive experiences and the Magic Castle and stuff like that. So it was a very informative panel, and one that I really enjoyed.
Is that so?
Yes.
Well, that sounds wonderful.
Oh, good.
I'm glad you had a good time. I start off my day at a live performance from the Midnight Marinera podcast. They're an audio drama podcast doing tales of mostly of creepypasta.
Ooh, I love creepypasta.
So they kind of, it's funny, they kind of had a little brief description of what creepypasta was, and then they did a few shorts. They weren't, you know, where they acted out, you know, some of the scenarios. Yeah. And I'm not, and forgive my not remembering exactly how to describe it, but how would you describe creepypasta?
Oh man, they're kind of just like these messed up creepy stories. I don't know where the pasta part comes in, but
no, that's not the definition. Just messed up. There's something about them in particular.
Maybe let's see.
I'll just look it up and see. I don't know. The pasta is not a part of it.
Creepy pastas are horror-related legends or images that have been copy and pasted around the internet.
There we go. All right. Well,
the most famous one being
Slenderman. Right. So they're kind of like modern-day urban legends.
Yes.
That's the best way to describe them.
Yes. That's actually a great way to... And I really want to start a podcast about urban legends.
Yeah, okay. sorry, you sidetracked me with that one. they also did like a kamikaze... I don't know if that's the best way to describe it. Story where the participants didn't know what the story was, and they were doing it live. They had the script, but they didn't know what it was. And I don't recall how that happened, like how they chose it or whatever it was. But I guess obviously one person knew what it was, but not the people that were acting it out. And it ended up being My Little Pony fan fiction.
Oh my god!
So that was pretty funny. Two of the members of this podcast are in Foolish Mortals, so
very cool.
So obviously, they're doing quality work if they were made the cut of the film. But yeah, it was a cool way to start the day. And that's how I did. And so the next thing that I went to, I believe you and I went to this together, was the Halloween Horror Nights panel. This is a panel.
I don't believe we went together. We most certainly went together, because there was no way either one of us was going to miss that.
Yeah, well, I just... You're right. No, I know we weren't going to miss it. I know that we both saw it. I'm just... You know, it was a few weeks ago. I just didn't remember if we literally went there together. But I think this is one of the few things that we did together the entire day. Anyways, this panel, look, they really care if we went together. This panel, it's about Halloween Horror Nights Hollywood.
Yes.
To be specific. And it was hosted by the gentlemen that lead the parade there.
Murdy.
Yes, John Murdy.
John Murdy. And the art director, which is Chris Williams.
There we go, man. and so let's talk about this panel. It was pretty interesting, and it was so interesting that I'm going to put it at the end of this episode. I was trying to figure out what was the day two equivalent of the Tower of Terror retrospective panel. And... I think it was this one. I think the Creepy Kingdom listeners want Halloween Horror Nights.
I'm sure they do. Most people do.
Yes, they do. So we're going to put it at the end of this, just for you. So without getting too deep into it, they announced Scare Zones. We were kind of expecting a house announcement. We didn't get it. So basically, I think...
just at our experience with this and in our life, when we first came out here, it was Scare LA, and just as a recap, the team that made Scare LA in 2015 awesome, which was extensively covered on Creepy Kingdom, has the people that started Midsummer Scream. So we went to that Scare LA. They had the Hollywood Horror Nights panel. At the top of it, they announced Halloween, right? I could have sworn that's what it was.
At Scare LA?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't really matter. But it doesn't matter what they announced, but they saying they announced it. So, right, I would say the precedent was set for us right there that these panels at these big conventions months before the event that we're going to get some house announcements. Last year, the inaugural year of Midsummer Scream, I don't recall there being any announcements there, whether.
No.
So then they're like, oh, we're going to break that. So we were kind of on the fence. They're like, are we going to get an announcement? Are we not? The announcements were kind of light up until that point for Hollywood. There were only a few things there. So we were kind of like, well, let's hear about it. But they did announce Scare Zones, which is cool.
There was no official name for them.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I guess they weren't really ready to announce them.
Right.
Yeah, as you'll hear, that was another interesting thing that they said, that they had to all the legal things that go with that when they name scare zones, because eventually they're creating intellectual properties.
Yep.
So it's pretty interesting. Anyways, so but the other things that they did was they talked about the houses that were announced. They talked a lot about The Shining, and they talked about how much a little behind the scenes.
Yeah, I thought it was pretty cool. I mean, I thought it was better than the year previous.
I don't even remember what was in the year previous.
I think they did something. It was like a retrospective on Halloween or something.
Wasn't that what they did the first time we saw it?
No, at Scare LA they announced the Halloween house. And that was like a big announcement. Last year it was like, hey, let's...
No, you're confusing that with Monster Palooza of 2016. Because we were... we went to that panel and they were talking about the history of Halloween because they were... That was in Pasadena and that was near... They were near the house. I guess it doesn't really matter what they did last year because we
anyways,
don't remember.
So I liked it a lot better this year. There were videos, you know, the little trailers for the houses that they had announced, and I love any type of behind-the-scenes artwork, and so they showed some for the scare zones, which I thought was really cool, so.
Yeah, I mean, I usually don't like behind-the-scenes stuff before I experience them. But, you know, it's still interesting. But I have to say, though, out of any panel I went to that entire weekend, like, you would have thought, like, you're at a rock concert before they came on. The vibe in that place, I mean, that place was packed to the brims. There was an excitement in the air.
Yep.
People love Halloween Horror Nights.
They really do. They really do. So it'll be interesting to see what the next two announcements are going to be.
So, to recap at this point, for Hollywood, we've got American Horror Story, Roanoke, The Shining, and
Ash
vs. Evil Dead, and the Titans of Terror House, which is Freddy, Jason, Leatherface, and Chucky.
Well, Chucky's only on the tram tour.
All right, so
so hold on. The Titans of Terror is two different experiences. You have one that is a maze.
Okay.
And then also Hollywood has a tram tour, which they then transform into the Terror Tram for Halloween. And that will have Chucky. He will be the one guiding the tram.
Which it's I'm super confused about this, and I'm wondering how they're going to execute it. I mean, we don't need to go too deep into that on this episode, but because my experience on a Terror Tram in 2015, I didn't get to go to Hollywood's in 2016, was, and that was Purge themed, is that you get on there and you get on the tram, which is the classic, you know, Universal Studios tram tour, but they're taking you to a location. So while you're on the tram, they have videos going and say, oh, you know, you're now victims of the purge, and you know,
and it'll be the same for the Titans of Terror.
So once we got off the tram, then we were kind of herded as victims of the purge, and then it's this kind
which
of
is also part of the tram tour.
I guess, but you're off the tram. Is kind of what I'm saying.
Yeah, but that's all considered the tram, the terror tram.
Right. But yeah. So what's confusing to me is, so you're going to have this kind of like drive to. They basically drive, if you've ever been on the tram tour before, they drive to Whoville, which is right around the corner from the Bates Motel, and then you walk through the War of the World set. That's what we did that year. You walk by, you know,
and that's what they did last year.
That's what I was figuring. So it's interesting they're going to have a walk-through experience off the tram and then a separate maze.
Yeah, I don't know.
That seems like... seems like kind of overkill, right?
I mean, I have opinions. All right, that
I'm not asking you.
But yes.
I guess we'll just wait and see what it actually
is. We'll see.
Anyways, any other thoughts really about the Hollywood Horror Nights panel before we move on?
No, I mean, it was enjoyable.
Enjoyable. What a glowing review from Shannon McGurk. Enjoyable. The next thing on the schedule, Nikki covered this, and I have some notes for it here. And we actually have a little bit of audio we're going to play for it. It was a panel called Horrors of the Exotic, Tiki and Monster Culture. This is a panel, I mean, it's about tiki culture and it had monsters. And it's a panel that was put on by another participant of Foolish Mortals. Foolish Mortals was all up in Midsummer Scream.
Bill Rude
put this on. And here's what Nikki had to say about it. I'm not going to impersonate Nikki. The first thing Nikki had to say, though, was that my favorite parts of the whole Midsummer Scream were the tiki panel and seeing Sid Haig walk into the meds room. If only she were here to elaborate on that story and why that was one of her favorite things. Maybe he had a really interesting walk, the way that he was walking. You know, I don't know. Anyways, the tiki was great for the historical aspect. He really dug into the history of the two. I guess the two of tiki and monsters. And how they've been intertwined since the emergence of tiki at the end of World War II as the troops came home. I'm really hoping this expands into a book. He had some great info, and it sounded like he had a lot more. Well, I don't know. But Bill, he also is an artist. He's got his Seven Hells.
Yep.
Definitely check out his artwork. Check him out in Foolish Mortals. He also is a huge... Krampus supporter.
Yes, he is.
As he dresses as Krampus and goes to many events throughout the holiday season, spreading the word of Krampus.
I have experienced it many times.
Including an event where it was a Krampus and Bob Gurr signing. I don't really know how those things really came together. But, and, you know, Bob Gurr being the amazing, legendary Disney Imagineer. So, you see, and that's the one thing about Southern California for everyone who doesn't live around here. This weird horror haunt Disney stuff, it just melds
together. It all
together.
Meshes together.
Like, yeah, it's just, everyone's all into all this stuff. There's not a big separation, which is really showcased throughout Midsummer Scream, to say the least. Anyways, moving on from that, what was the next thing that you went to, Shannon? Did you experience any other panels that day?
After Halloween Horror Nights?
Yeah. Or...
I was done. I tapped out.
All right. Well, really glad that you're here to help.
No problem. I had a really busy time, so...
What do you mean you were done? What were you doing?
That was probably when I went shopping.
All right. Well...
I mean, I'm sure there are other things that I did. Networking, shopping.
Cool. Well, we covered Josh did everyone's every escape room, so we covered that last episode. I don't know if we. I'm sure we talked about the vendors. I don't know. I mean, that, we can't sit here and talk about each vendors. I mean, it was such a but just so many. Walking around the vendor floor, like, you can't walk 3 feet without seeing somebody you know.
Yeah.
You know, and you're like, that's really, I'm really happy for you, James. But the point I'm making is that there was such a sense of community all around there.
Yeah.
And such great, great vendors all around. So I'm trying to, I believe we talked about this last time. I'm just going to move on from the floor. I'm not going to get into that. let's see. So the next thing on the schedule was something that also that Nikki experienced. It was a preview of the musical Slashed. This is a musical that based on the theme of an 80s slasher film. You and I saw the entire production.
Yep, and I guess they're coming back.
Coming back to where?
This October with a longer one.
Longer than the original?
Yeah.
Which I would say it was like half an hour?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't know how long this preview was, but it, I guess I thought it was the whole show until Nikki told me later that it wasn't. Which is smart, I guess.
Yeah.
You know, this, you know, let's give everybody, you know, the first taste is free. Let me read Nikki's thoughts on Slashed. So, sing, dance, drink, smoke, and blank, definitely.
I think the blank was a swear word.
Yes. This is a family show. That lyric pretty much sums up Slash. It's a story of Petey Jenkins, but he doesn't stand a chance against the metal babe who takes him down. The songs were surprisingly good, very sing-alongable. Hopefully they release a soundtrack so you can relive this. They manage to collect pretty much every 80s stereotype, which made it totally relatable.
In regards to the soundtrack, I do believe it is available online.
It is available. That's cool because I'm not necessarily a big musical guy, I guess, but the show was so fun.
So fun.
You know, and the songs were definitely stuck in my head afterwards. Do you know who wrote the songs? Do you have any intel on that?
I believe it was all written by...
Am I really putting you on a spot here?
Sean Keller.
Sean Keller?
Wait.
Why don't we fact check that?
I'm almost positive. Hold on. Yes.
Sean Keller, ladies and gentlemen. Sean Keller. Wrote the song. Was that, is that the person that wrote the musical? I mean, or...
Yeah. I mean, this is off topic, but it's the... He's the boyfriend of the woman who directed it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
How adorable.
Yes.
I don't think you and I could...
Chelsea Peters...
Could write and direct a musical
No.
together.
Chelsea Peters directed it, and then Sean Keller wrote it.
It's a lot of fun. So, you know, I don't think they're taking this one national, but who knows what we're going to do with it. I mean, you know, they could make a film out of it.
Yeah.
Who knows? I don't know. But it's very cool, and I'm glad it was part of Midsummer Scream. People got to check it out because it was one of, I really enjoyed it when we saw it a few months ago.
Yeah, I loved it, and I'm excited to see. I would love to see a longer version of it, so.
Alrighty. Let's see. The next thing on the schedule, there was two more panels at the same time. I'll do what Nikki saw, and then I'll get in what I saw last. The other one that she saw was the Immersive Horror Theater panel. So.
Which I felt really bad about not going to.
Why? Where were you?
Probably shopping.
You didn't feel that bad.
No,
shopping.
I did feel bad. I was so burnt out by the end that, like...
Was anyone from Nightmarish Conjurings in that room?
Everybody was covering, like, something.
Wow.
Yeah.
So this
these are great people.
So this is a scoop that Creepy Kingdom has on Nightmarish Conjurings.
This is a scoop.
And this is like what you're all about. As I want to kind of explain, why don't you give a little bit explanation of what this immersive thing is that's kind of been exploding in the past year here in Southern California.
I mean, immersive is just, for those that love going to haunts, you go to a haunt and you walk through a maze and it's over. Immersive takes that step further where you're literally immersed in whatever is going on. People, will talk to you. People can touch you. You're just immersed in the environment more so than going through a haunt. Usually,
going through a haunt, you would say, is kind of passive. I know people are jumping up and they're scared. You're scary,
right.
But it's kind of passive.
Right.
This is like the best way to describe immersive, in my opinion, is like they're trying to make this seem like this is really happening.
Yes.
For as long as possible, and sometimes way before you even get to the event. By the way, they interact with you online.
Depending
sometimes
on how extreme
sometimes
it
they
is.
Call you.
Yeah. I mean, I'm going to like four of them in the next 3 days. So,
and not all of them are horror related.
No.
Too. Some of them are just
tonight. I'm going to one. It's horror related. Tomorrow's horror related. Saturday, it's not horror related. They're all different.
Tonight, Thursday, Friday, Saturday. Man, you're like happy days with the immersives over there.
Yeah. My life.
Yeah, yeah. I literally can't keep track. I don't know what I'm like. I don't know what you're doing. Yeah, I don't get involved in all this stuff. But we did go to one immersive event that I thought was pretty interesting. It was like a year or two ago. I don't really remember. But it was at Zombie Joe's Underground, which is, he was on Zombie Joe, the person, the zombie. He was on this panel, and his place is pretty tests the boundaries of things, and
it's awesome.
And then, and I can always say every time I go see a show there, I usually end up seeing something I hadn't seen before, and that's that's saying a lot, because I kind of feel like I've seen it all, right? but the show I'm talking about, it was like we went to this thing, and it was like the theme of it was like a party, so there was all these actors that were say they had like an open house for like a party, and it was kind of like actually going to a party and not really knowing anyone, except all the actors, they would talk to you and they would talk about the other people. And you could sense that there was like this drama going on. It wasn't horror related or anything at all.
Nope.
It just kind of was like boiling up to like a huge like argument.
Yep.
And I was like, that was really cool, because it was kind of like actually going to a party and not knowing anybody.
Yeah.
but then, just things boiled over. And so that's just an example of what immersive can be. Anyways, let's get to what Nikki had to say about the panel, Stage and Scream, Immersive Horror Theater. It's like most of this is about immersive panel. It might have been a note for me. Anyways, as someone that doesn't produce these, a lot of this was out of my scope, but I imagine that it would be a lot for... It would be that for most that attend. Yeah, I mean, most that attend they don't put these on.
Right.
The info about the safety of the performers and the level of trust involved from both the cast and audience spoke to the level of the art these entail. Immersive just can't be slapped together, nor do they have a storyline to impart. They have to keep coming up with variables to keep the audience on the correct path within the story. And have a way to protect the cast in the event that somebody, a participant, acts up. So I guess basically what she's kind of saying is that they really gave a lot of feedback on how to pull this off.
Yeah.
So, which, if you want to look behind the curtain, I guess that'd be...
I think it's probably more for people who are involved, meaning... that they go, they go to these things, and because immersive isn't for everybody.
No, It's not for me, mostly.
No, it's not. So I think it's more based around that.
Oh, well.
But I could be wrong. Because I was an awful person and I did not go.
Well, that's what Nikki had to say about it. So I just wanted to, I wanted to get a little bit of taste of that for the show. I feel like that's going to be leading more as into a an area that's more accessible for, you know, not so on the victim experience side, as I like to call it, but more the like, if, for example, you're involved in one that's kind of loosely based on The Wizard of Oz, right?
Yes, and
I'm not involved. I mean, she participated, not.
Yeah, I am super excited. It has
what's it called?
It is called The Kansas Collection by this company called the Speakeasy Society, and I've literally been doing this for probably close to a year.
Wow.
They're on their fourth chapter, and it's based off the stories of the Land of Oz.
But it's set in real, like, right now, right?
Yes. It goes back and forth between Oz and real time. And your job is to pretty much, you have to make a choice. I'm not going to go too much into details about it, but it has to do with the Scarecrow King and Dorothy, et cetera, et cetera.
Well,
there's a war going on, and you have to pick your side.
Oh, I got you. Well, there you go. So that I'm saying, I kind of feel like this could really lead somewhere, and I feel like this could lead into the theme park world. Like, I do feel. from what we've been hearing about things that are happening with Star Wars Galaxy's Edge, that's coming to Disneyland and Hollywood Studios. That there seems to be a lot of that going to be kind of going on, that you're just going to be living it 24 hours a day as the Star Wars hotel that they announced, you know, that, and that your actions dictate what happens to you. People know about it. You build a reputation and all that kind of stuff, you know. So I feel like we're getting closer and closer to be able to really step into our favorite movies and TV shows, you know, and just really feel like you're a part of it, which is pretty exciting. I think that's where all this is going. I don't know. I know there's a big push for VR right now, which is not super exciting to me, but I think it's a step. I still think it's a step in the right direction, but there needs to be something else. But that's, you know, we'll see. VR has not made its way to the Disney or Universal parks yet, but I don't know. I've heard some rumors about some things, and I'm like, we'll see. Anyways, the other panel that was happening at that same time that I went to was the 45 years of Knott's Scary Farm. So if you're unfamiliar with Knott's Scary Farm, or you didn't hear day one review, you know, Knott's Berry Farm is one of the oldest theme parks. I think it actually says it's America's first theme park when you walk in, and they could say that because they had the first themed land before it was anything. I mean, it would start off being a farm, but then they had themed land to attract some for the kids to do, which is the ghost town. Anyways, but they also created the haunted house, the haunted attraction. They were the first to do haunted walkthroughs in 1971. They basically created the industry. And this is the 45th, this year will be the 45th year that they're, you know, that they're doing this. So this was a retrospective of you know, of all that time. And they had they basically had three or four sets of panels that they, from different time periods.
Wow.
So they would, then they had about, I mean, this was an hour and a half, so they about had like maybe like 20 minutes or so on each of them. And this was very awesome. I was tempted to put this as the bonus thing, but I figured people wanted Hollywood Horror. Across the country, people wanted Hollywood Horror Nights more. But yeah, this was a very insightful thing. I mean, I don't really know too much about the history. I mean, I never went when I was a kid living in California, and I never even heard of it when I was a kid, I'd be honest with you. Like, it was just like a just off my radar. I mean, I definitely went to Knott's Berry Farm when I was a kid, but whatever. My parents weren't taking me to haunted attractions when I was a kid. It was something that I learned after being with Shannon that that's something that most people do that was not a part of my childhood at all. So I didn't start doing it until I was an adult. Oddly enough. But anyways, I don't, you know, I'm actually really eager to learn more about the history of Knott's Berry Farm. And this was just like a real, even though it was an hour and a half, I mean, you can't get too deep with all those people. You gotta.
Right. There's a lot of people there because one of my writers covered it, and it's a lot of information.
Well, what do you remember anything about what he said? This mystery person that you won't refer to by name?
No, my mystery person is Craig Thayer. Not particularly. I know they had, like, everybody, you know, it was a range of people. I know John Cook was on it, but I don't remember everybody else because I wasn't at that one.
So, yeah, it was very interesting that they did this separately because they had Scary Farm had a separate panel day one.
Yes.
It wasn't super long, but they dropped some.
It was packed.
It was packed. I mean... Just second to Horror Nights.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, like, this was like number two. I mean, it's like, and we're not Scary Farm country, man. Like, you know, we're in Long Beach. Yeah, Not Scary Farm's in Buena Park, which is, I don't know, maybe like 15 minutes away from
about.
You know, so it was a, you know, we were in Scary Farm territory there, to say the least. So, and, you know, they dropped some bombshells during their short panel about this year's Scary Farm. But to really take a separate retrospective thing, I have the page up there, and there's, let me count them there, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. There were 11 people that
were
on that panel. Yep, and some of the original scare actors. And one of the interesting thing there, which is kind of a little bit of a Southern California phenomenon, is they had the person that kind of figured out the best way to do sliding. I guess he was kind of the originator of sliding. And it's something that scare actors do. It's kind of like if you're walking around and on the streets of a haunted attraction,
they slide on their knees.
They'll slide down low, or they'll lay flat. And this guy was kind of talking about how I don't remember if he said he did it first, but he's the one he thought of including skateboard knee pads and wrist pads.
Interesting.
And then welding metal to them so they slide, but also have more of a scraping sound. And it's really become I didn't really know about this until we moved out here. It's really become a thing. They don't seem to do that on the East Coast. I never hear about that at Hollywood Horror Nights Orlando or Hollow Scream in Busch Gardens, Tampa. Or any Six Flags Fright Fest on the country.
They might do it at Busch Gardens, Virginia.
Oh, who knows? Anyways, I didn't know about it, but it's a very big thing. And last year, they even had a slider competition at Queen Mary's Dark Harbor that I covered for Nightmarish Conjurings. It wasn't on Creepy Kingdom, but I made a video of it. So I didn't, and they had sliders from all the different haunts kind of do a little competition. I mean,
it was pretty amazing.
Yeah, it was, and you know, it's pretty interesting stuff. And there's a documentary called Sliders of Ghost Town.
Yep.
Which I'd be really interested to see. I just saw a few days ago that is on Amazon Prime, that anybody that has that.
Oh.
So you can watch it for free if you have Amazon Prime. So I haven't watched it, so I don't know if it's any good or not. But if what we're saying sounds interesting to you, yeah, I would like to. I actually want to dig deeper into the history of Knott's Scary Farm. I find it pretty fascinating how they started doing this kind of on a whim, and it created a multi-million-dollar industry.
Yep.
and Knott's is older than Disneyland, and it's about 10 minutes away from Disneyland, so they've been kind of... wow, sounds like an airplane is flying in here. It's coming in for a landing right on the podcast. Shannon's sitting right by the window, so just super loud headphones. Anyway, so... whatever, I don't know. Very interesting panel. I might put it out there as a bonus episode or something. I don't know. It was a lot of fun. But and then after that, I did get to peek in very shortly to the screaming room. I think I went in the screaming before Knott's, and I think that's where you ended up.
Yes, while I was in Knott's. That's where I was. Yeah. I was in the screaming room.
Which...
was hosted by Horror Buzz.
Hosted by Horror Buzz. And running, you know, the AV team was our friends Eric and Amantha running that. So I did see a little bit of a short film, but I feel like that could really be a separate event amongst itself. Like, I would love to go in there and watch and watch a whole bunch of different horror shorts. I think that would be so much fun.
It was cool. Like, I got to see some. There was one that I really liked called Balloon. But they had a pretty good crowd in there.
Yeah.
It was pretty packed, so.
And they had some couches. Wouldn't you just love to sit up on some couches?
That's exactly what I did, and yeah. It was the only place that had, like, hardcore air conditioning.
Yeah, it was, like, 30 degrees colder in there than anywhere else.
Yeah.
So, that kind of concluded Midsummer Scream. We ended our day at the Long Beach chapter of Hooters.
Yep. That was an experience in and of itself.
Yeah. So we're going to spend the next hour here kind of giving a review of our meal at Hooters.
Yeah. It was awful.
It was all right. Whatever. I might have said this last show. I don't remember, but I'm going to say it now. I was just really humbled and blown away by how many people said hi to me that knew me from the show, from Creepy Kingdom here, or from Foolish Mortals. You know, I was kind of there. You know, I didn't do anything as part of it. I wasn't part of anything there. I was just there to cover the event for Creepy Kingdom, you know, and I kind of had that hat on. You know, like, I wasn't really thinking, like, oh, no, people are going to talk to me because they know what I do, you know. You know, and that was so awesome. I love meeting, you know, listeners of the show, if only brief moments. But, you know, that's kind of one of the reasons I love doing the show, is kind of meeting like-minded people. And So that was really awesome for me personally. Also, another thing I realized, too, is I remember I was going down like that Sunday night or whatever, I was going through the Instagram feed, Creepy Kingdom, and I would say like 80% of my feed were people posting of Creepy Kingdom's feed were people posting pictures from Midsummer Scream.
Oh yeah, a huge amount.
And I was like, wow. I mean, I had no idea, and that's when I realized, like, wow, most of our social media following, first of all, are in Southern California, which I didn't realize, but I know our listeners are all over the country. But it's on, and more of that, I really felt like, wow, this, like, really, like, that sense of community, that of the love for all this, like, creepy Halloween stuff. And it was just such a that's what you feel at Midsummer Scream. Like, it's unlike any other thing, because it's kind of like for fans by fans.
Yep. That's like, what makes it so great. Like, there's no what's the word I'm looking for? There's pretentiousness.
No, there's no pretentiousness, but I think another thing that's not there, which is at most conventions, whether it be just regular Comic-Cons or even horror conventions, is you really get this feeling like they're just trying to just suck as much money out of you as possible. Yep. Every step of the way. Like, you know what I mean? Like, you know, just everything is an upcharge, you know, everything, you know, like that. And it just... I don't get that feeling like that at all. They just offer so much for the ticket cost of $30 for 2 days that you one person literally could not do it all. Like, you know, we Creepy Kingdom and Nightmare at Connors, we had to split it up with teams trying to get all this stuff. And you could make the most out of it. Whatever you want to do, you want to go to just do haunts and just do escape rooms for $30. I mean, going to escape rooms is usually like what, $20 in general.
It's like 40.
40?
Depending on it, wow. Yeah, like so, 30, 40.
So there you go. I mean, there's smaller experiences, but you could just do that.
Yeah.
And get your money's worth. You know, you could just hang out in the screaming room.
Go to all the haunts.
Did I just say that? But, you know, or you could go to the panels. But you really can't do it all, which is why we need an extra day of Midsummer Scream.
Yes, we do.
I don't know. Have you ever said that to any of them as you're socially?
No, I haven't, and I should.
Yeah. So do it.
All right.
I mean, I don't know if they want to. I don't know if it's feasible or not, but I would say the demand is definitely there. The attendance, what did they say? It tripled from the first years?
Yeah, it was ridiculous. I think it did triple.
So, you know, and the first year wasn't light. You know, I thought it was pretty pretty packed, but yeah. This is something pretty special there. We're all really excited about it. We're going to keep covering it, of course, on the show, and see where it goes in the future. We did get confirmation. You're scratching the microphone.
I'm sorry.
So unprofessional. We did get confirmation that Midsummer's coming back.
Yes, it is. They just yesterday, I believe, had their meeting for 2018.
There we go. I got that confirmation at Midsummer Scream when I was a guest on the Theme Park Duo podcast, who were recording live on the floor, and we were talking about Queen Mary's announcements.
Yep.
Dark Harbor. And as we're chatting, Rick West walks by. Rick West, one of the... what is his title of Midsummer Scream?
I have no idea.
That's a great title. Whatever. He's one of the executive people, and listeners know from the epic 2-part episode earlier this year about, you know, what Rick West is bringing to the table. Because I know that is one of our most popular episodes, so I know that you guys love that in download numbers, but also in feedback. So if I didn't mention that in this episode, I think I mentioned the last one, but that guy is part of the team that made this. So...
Full circle.
And anyways, he had mentioned something about Midsummer's coming back when he stopped by really quick and chimed in. So we knew. I was like, all right, there's an official announcement. But I guess that's not really much of a surprise. I don't know why. I mean, when you see how packed it is and how successful it is and how much everybody loves it, you know, there's no reason for it to stop.
No, I don't think it's going to slow down anytime soon.
They might start doing this twice a year.
Maybe.
Mid-winter scream?
Maybe. Doesn't have the same ring to it.
No. All right, well, let's see here. So, after we're done chatting here, I do have a little bit of audio from the Tiki panel, which is not called the Tiki panel. What was that called? Monsters, Horrors of the Exotic Monster in Tiki Culture. I do have a little bit of audio of that. And then after that, you're going to get the full Halloween Horror Nights panel.
Woohoo!
Right in your ears.
Thank you so much for having me.
You're welcome. You know, I don't know if you'll be back on.
I'm sure you'll make me.
But I'm sure that you will. you know, I mean, listeners listen to, you know, us talk about Halloween stuff last year. What are we both experiencing together? Well, we'll both be going to Queen Mary's Dark Harbor. So, you know, maybe I'll get you on that show. I don't know. It's funny enough, as this season's gearing up, we're not doing that much together.
No.
But,
aw, sad face. I don't think you want to be doing the amount of stuff that I'm doing.
No. I'm not sad about it, but I don't, you know, we don't know when we're going to Halloween Horror Nights Hollywood, so, but it'd be, I'm interested to discuss that and the parallels between that and Halloween Horror Nights Orlando, as there's many of the same houses, and to talk about how they're different and the different feel and all that stuff. So that's something that's coming up. I'm going to Orlando. Shannon is not.
No, Shannon cannot go.
And you know I'm going to Orlando, listeners, because it's part of the creepy tour. But anyways, why don't you just tell people, you know, about, you know, what's going on with Nightmarish Conjurings and, you know, how we're to find you online, all that fun stuff.
All right, well, we're going to be kicking off all of our haunt coverage in a couple weeks. We really kicked it off.
Midsummer Scream.
I mean, technically Midsummer Scream, but I was able to go to a preview night of the It Experience in L.A., so that was really like the kickoff of going to haunts.
Yeah.
So you can find us at nightmarishconjurings.com. You can find us on Facebook and Instagram at Nightmarish Conjurings, and Twitter at Nightmarish with a number one instead of the... So NIGHTMAR...
The second I is one.
Yes, thank you. I'm very tired. I apologize.
I'm like, no one's writing anything down. You're like, wait, say that again. Start over.
So you can find us everywhere.
I think if you search Nightmarish Conjurings, it's still going to come up in the Twitter.
Yeah,
thing.
Probably.
Yeah.
So you can find us on all social media. Like I said, we're about to really kick off haunt season and horror movies and all that good stuff.
And I think really, you know, Creepy Kingdom and Nightmarish Conjurings, you know, we cross paths a little bit there, but you know, we try to keep it family friendly, some, you know, like things that aren't too extreme in our coverage. But if you want to, you know, take it up a notch, that's kind of where the divide is there.
Absolutely.
So
you can come on over to where I am.
But no podcast yet. Huh?
No, someday. Someday.
Yeah, someday. Alrighty. Well, let's hear a little bit about Tiggies and Monsters and then Halloween Horror Nights panel for Midsummer Scream 2017.
The film Pandora and the Flying Dutchman was made in 1951. It was actually a romantic drama that depicts the Flying Dutchman as a cursed captain of a ship, not the ship itself. And I'm sure most of you are from Southern California and may know the Flying Dutchman is also an item on the In-N-Out secret menu. Another common nautical story is that of Davy Jones Locker. Davy Jones Locker is slang for the bottom of the sea, where you do not want the ship to go. But is also said to be the destination for a cursed soul, who becomes part of the personal affects of the cursed pirate known as Davy Jones. In 1835, Edgar Allan Poe actually referred to death as Davy Jones in his story King Pest. There were also legends of creatures part woman, part bird, who would use their enchanting songs to lure sailors to wreck their ships onto the rocks. They were called harpies, or sirens in Greek mythology. Other forms of sirens have appeared as women with two long fishtails, as in the type used for the Starbucks coffee logo. They're also thought to be the origins of mermaids and mermen, who inspired their own special superstitions, believing bringing either good luck or bad luck upon witnessing them. In an attempt to battle the horrors of the sea, many sailors would get tattoos. The tradition of sailors and tattoos is thought to have begun when Captain James Cook encountered the Maori in the 1700s and the crew got souvenir tattoos. Since then, a history of superstition was established around many of the common images. A pig tattooed on the top of your left foot and a rooster on your right are symbols of good luck. It is thought that the sight of images of animals unable to swim, God himself would pick the sailor from a shipwreck and place him on land. It was one of the moments I was disappointed in the otherwise perfect movie Moana, was that her sidekicks were a pig and a rooster, and they never did anything about them not sinking because of it. A compass rose, otherwise known as a North Star, is to help guide a sailor home. If these tattoos were not able to save you from the various horrors of the sea, your last-ditch effort were sparrows, who were thought to always find their way home and would fly your soul to heaven after you died. Weather itself is probably the greatest fear on water, as it is unpredictable. But most some natural phenomena are even more mysterious, such as a maelstrom or vortex. These are giant whirlpools, and in the case of a vortex, pull you down and under the water. A common nautical horror, they are mentioned in Moby Dick and Captain Nemo commits suicide by sacrificing his submarine, the Nautilus, to one in 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea. Another spoiler alert. Edgar Allan Poe was actually credited with writing one of the first science fiction stories ever in 1841's A Descent into the Maelstrom. Because of the technical problem solving the main character applied to survive the vortex. On land, similar natural phenomenon exists, and we call that quicksand. Quicksand, essentially, the maelstrom of the jungle. An accurate observation made by comedian John Mulaney points out, growing up, I thought that quicksand was going to be a much bigger problem than it turned out to be. This may be because, as Slate.com wrote, in the 1960s, almost 3% of all films depicted someone sinking in a quicksand. It is common knowledge that many tropical getaways, such as the Hawaiian Islands, were created by giant volcanoes. In our unpredictable world of horror, we refer to them as time bombs. Wrong tropical place at the wrong eruption time, and you may find yourself burning to death or simply asphyxiated by toxic gas released by the thermal vents. With great geological power comes great geological treasure. Diamonds, gold, or stoves of priceless artifacts can be found in dangerous mines or labyrinthine caves that no one returns from. Above ground, it is also easy to get lost in the jungle, and your chances of returning diminish greatly if that jungle happens to be infested with carnivorous plants. Oddly, most of the carnivorous monstrous plant movies that we're familiar with deal with aliens in outer space. Invasion of the Body Snatchers, Little Shop of Horrors from 1960, Day of the Triffids in 1962, but there were some lesser knowns that dealt with the plants as more terrestrial in origin that kind of fit more of our exotic tiki culture. If some still depend on magic or radiation to establish their menace, Adam West's first film, Voodoo Island, in 1957, as the name implies, depended on voodoo to animate the plants, which was also the case in From Hell It Came of the same year, big year for carnivorous foliage. Montongo, a Japanese film from 1963, was essentially the story of Gilligan's Island, almost down to each character, shipwrecked and tormented on an island of mushroom people. Continuing it being very similar. But probably the most South Pacific of the Carnivorous Plant movies was The Navy versus the Night Monsters from 1966, dealing with a sudden revival of prehistoric sentient.
Please welcome to the stage Halloween Horror Nights Hollywood art director, Chris Williams. And Halloween Horror Nights Hollywood creative director, John Murdy.
Good afternoon. How are you guys doing? I'm John Murdy. I'm creative director, executive producer of Halloween Horror Nights.
Thanks for coming. Thanks for supporting us, too. We greatly appreciate it. Thank you, guys.
So today what we're going to do is we're going to give a little sneak peek of some of the things you can expect to see at Halloween Horror Nights 2017. I'm assuming a lot of you guys have been to the event, right? How many of you guys have been to Halloween Horror Nights?
You should more ask
who has. Okay, well, yeah. Who hasn't been to Halloween Horror Nights?
You guys got to get it.
You guys got to come. Please. Well, before we get into 2017, we're going to take a look back at Halloween Horror Nights 2016. Slide, please. Support you guys give our event. We are truly grateful for that support, and at the end of our presentation today, I'm going to be asking an extremely difficult trivia question, and we're going to be giving away some frontline tickets to Horror Nights 2017 and an exclusive behind-the-scenes tour with the creators. Check it out. Come on,
Horror Nights. Great, get that.
Keep that in the back of your mind. First of all, recently on Twitter, I asked fans to submit questions that we would answer for you live on stage today. So we're going to start with one of those questions. Next slide. Question is, how did you and Chris meet from Nick Engel at Nickish Kid One? Do you remember that? It's a long time ago.
Yes. We were working on a show together, actually, with SES. I came to Universal in the mid-90s, actually, to come in and work on Halloween at that time, during that five-year run. So I was hired by the entertainment department, and kind of within what produced a little bit, the creative department saw that and started to bring me into art direct stuff, and then that's when I actually met John.
Yeah, I was with Universal Creative, actually, which is like the equivalent of Imagineering at Disney. So I was designing and producing rides and shows and attractions, and I was working on a project called Special Effects Stages. And do you remember the old Special Effects Stage where Transformer? Yeah. And they mentioned to me that there was an art director at the park named Chris Williams that they wanted to hook me up with. And pretty quickly, I realized that we were pretty much the same person.
You know, in John's office, office up. I had dual offices because I had one in entertainment and then also one in creative downstairs. But, you know, in John's office in the back behind his desk, I remember that he had, and he still has it, this huge poster of
Frankenstein. The Belgian version of Frankenstein.
And that's before I had met him. And I'm like, who is this guy that, you know, behind him is just this massive picture of Frankenstein? And I had no idea who he was, but which we worked together, and that show ended up to be really actually successful, actually.
I think I have a picture if you click the next slide. This is right when we were opening special effects stages. This is the second set that called the Creature Factory. And over the years, you know, like Chris mentioned, I had this poster of Frankenstein. You know, a lot of times, you know, we accumulated a lot after our 12th year of doing Horror Nights. And Pat McGee Effects, who does a lot of our creatures, and he did The Exorcist with us last year. One day he just showed up and was like, "Hey, I made you a Reagan." And it was that version of Reagan where she's like sitting on the bed, like giggling right after the priest dies. And as some of you guys know, I've been kind of living in two countries the last year between Ireland and the United States, going back and forth. So I didn't really have any time to deal with it, so I just kind of shoved it into the corner of my office and left. And I was gone for a couple of weeks. And when I came back, there was a note from the cleaning staff. They said, "We're never gonna go in your office ever, you know, unless you do something with that, you know, possessed girl in the corner."
So John's office is completely filthy now, and everything's all piled up.
Let's go ahead and click the next slide. A follow-up question, also from Nick Engel. As a kid, could you have seen this as a career for you in the future? How many of you guys actually aspired to do something like this? Okay, cool.
Yeah, I aspired too. But honestly, it kind of didn't exist. A lot of the home haunts were home haunts and also campus life haunts, which were...
Does anybody remember campus life haunts? Yeah, there we go.
Yeah, so, you know, those were the ones that, you know, and also like high school ones as well that I attended when I was younger. But, you know, something like this didn't really exist. So really my focus was on to be like a makeup effects artist. I really wanted to be like a Dick Smith. I followed Dick Smith.
Did you have Dick Smith's horror makeup?
Yeah, I did as well. I got that one for Christmas. It's like the best Christmas gift I could ever receive. And, you know, that was the direction I was actually heading, actually. But, you know, how things happen, and you just veer off a little bit. And I started heading into this direction of more of a, really of a career of Halloween event design. And that's where this really has taken.
If you can click to the next slide. So, basically... Yes. I rented my parents' family albums. I saw Frankenstein when I was 4 years old. There's a picture of me in the lower corner where I've got like the Aurora monster models, and the cake says four. It's my fourth birthday. Some of those pictures up there are actually home haunts I did as a kid, which I'm sure these days you guys would smoke me. But my first haunted house I ever did in 1977 was Star Wars themed. That's me playing a Tusken Raider with a broom handle on my brother's C-3PO. But I came to Universal as a young kid. You see that awkward picture of me holding the Wolfman's hand with those groovy 60s pants. That's the way my parents dressed us back then. I grew up loving the Universal monster movies, and then when I realized you could come to Universal and you could actually meet the monsters, that was like a dream come true. The image where I have that makeup on my face, that was an old story that used to be in Universal, where they would do live makeup demonstrations back in the days when we had the Castle Dracula attraction and Man of a Thousand Faces, which is now where our special effects show is on the top deck. But I actually got made up like that in the park, and I can tell that 77 because I'm wearing a powder blue Iron Man decal Chewbacca shirt. And they just let me walk around the park. So the times have changed. I was walking around the park and like, all these tourists were coming up to my parents and yelling at them. I'm like, "Oh my God, take that child to first aid," you know. But as a kid, that was like the best day of my life. So after, you know, doing home haunts with my parents, you know, eventually I started the Universal as a tour guide in 1989 and kind of quickly figured out that there was a creative department. I started there as a PA, worked my way up as a coordinator, then became a, they realized I could write, so I was a showrunner, and then that's roughly around the time I met Chris, because I was writing a special effects show. And then after working for Crane for years and years and years, right after I finished the Mummy run here in Hollywood, I got a call. Thank you, the Mummy run. Still around. I got a call from our then general manager that they wanted to bring back Halloween Horror Nights. And they had been, the park hadn't done it for a number of years. And I knew, that's when I remembered Chris. And I went, oh yeah, I know the guy who's the art director of that. And I'd been through a lot of his mazes, and I thought they were excellent. So I really quickly decided to come back to LA and work with Chris to bring Halloween Horror Nights back to Hollywood. That was 2006. So let's get into a little sneak peek of some of the things you guys can experience at the event this year. If you click the next slide, well, I think we just made an announcement. And we got a little video that goes along with this announcement, so go ahead and run that. We'll click the next slide. Here you go.
What, you guys saw a guy with a chainsaw hand before?
So, we actually have a bit of history with Evil Dead. I mean, personally, Evil Dead 2 is one of my favorite horror movies of all time.
Mine as well.
Chris and I are big Evil Dead fans, so we got a chance in 2013 to do the remake of Evil Dead. Up on the screen, that's an image from our maze. That's the cabin that we built back in 2013. If you go ahead and click the slide. We got to do, you know, the entire cabin. How many of you guys went to that maze in 2013? Okay, quite a few of you. Go ahead and click the slide. This is one of my favorite makeups. Maybe Chris could explain real quick. Do you remember this in the remake movie where the girl slits her tongue with a razor? It's really nasty.
Yeah.
Chris had a genius idea.
And how we did this actually was an actual silicone slit tongue, and on the back side of that was essentially like a mouth guard that she's wearing in her mouth the whole time. So she comes on set with this tongue sticking out of her mouth, essentially. And then when she comes on, actually, to location, where she takes her rubber utility knife and actually cuts her tongue, you know, she's within light. So that's where the really reveal is. She's in darkness right prior to that. And so that really was really gruesome. It worked out really well for us. It was something that they could repeat 60,000 times. You know, as well as you can tell, you know, we jumped into contacts this year as well. So we were doing contacts. And also, you know, if you know a little bit about makeup, we were doing prosthetic, like, transfers, actually, to make burn three-dimensional looks. And that's something that we hadn't done before. But we did that actually through Larry Bones of Boneyard Effects at that time, actually.
Woo!
So that was just like an overall really cool makeup for Mia and our Evil Dead.
Yeah, if you click the next slide, this is another one of my favorite makeups. There is a scene in the movie where this girl has fun with a nail gun. She's got all these nails sticking out of her face. So just another one. And again, that's with prosthetic makeup as well. Go ahead and click the next step. This was an effect. A lot of times when we watch movies, Chris and I have to translate what we see up on the screen into a live experience. It's really difficult because in a movie, I always say, you know, you can do as many takes as you want. We'll talk about The Shining later. And some of those takes in that movie, you know, Cooper did over 100 takes. We don't get that much room in Horror Nights. It's live. We always say it's a new show every 10 seconds. So we have to make things that are very short, repeatable, and can be done all night long, but our actors also feel comfortable doing it. So if you go ahead and click the slide, this is the concept drawing for the scene where Mia jumps on top of another girl and vomits blood all over her. Go ahead and click. But we wanted that to happen so you could see the vomiting happen, but then we knew that everybody would do this, you know, they would just stand there and stare at it. So we wanted an ability for the actors in the scene to shoo away the people that didn't want to leave the set by turning the deadite's head sideways and blasting the guests with what they think is blood. So go ahead and click the slide. So do you remember this? When we were doing R&D on this?
Yeah, this... yeah, we have the victim underneath, and then we have Mia above her, but we had her on actually a hinge so that she could rotate up, actually, the performer could get underneath her, and then set her down on top of her. We tried to make the performer as comfortable as we can. You could tell there's a lot of water going on there, and you can see between the floorboards, we had a gap. And so we could have water drain through the floor and then get it pumped out. So we're not flooding the maze, because we would end up doing that over an 8 hour.
We have to do that.
Yes, we have. That's why we know that. That's why we put the reservoir in here. So we learned from our mistakes, actually.
And then if you click to the next slide, these are kind of just pictures people took as they were going through the maze, but that's how it looked on set. You saw the deadite vomiting all over the girl, and then she could turn her head and blast them so that they continued on through their merry way through the maze. Go ahead, click the next slide. And then last, this was another gag we did last time we did Evil Dead, where Mia had to enter the scene with a chainsaw, trigger her own lighting and audio cue, and then shove the chainsaw into the deadite's mouth, which is kind of asking the actress to do a lot, you know. So Chris designed this one as well.
Yeah, this was also in a scene that we had to make it look like it was raining blood, and that's what was going on at the end of the film. So, you know, we were scratching our head how to kind of do that and
making everybody's clothes
and not seeing it, and also that you can, you know, feel it textual, you know, you feel the rain. So we actually put a few misters at the top, running it with some rails at the top, and then heavy saturated red lighting, and also we painted everything in the scene red as well to help out. And with a combination of everything like that, it really turned out good, actually.
I think I have a picture of you at the next slide. There we go. So yeah, that's the finished product. So if we go ahead and click the next slide.
Yeah.
So Ash vs. Evil Dead, how many of you guys are fans of Ash vs. Evil Dead? So this maze just started construction not that long ago.
No, it started construction, I'd say, about 3 weeks ago. Week ago, Phoenix jumped in, so we're just starting to paint a few things and such.
So I'm going to give you a few hints of things you can expect to see in the maze, a little sneak peek. Go ahead and click the slide. So if you know the show, you know Ash now, he's living at the Mossy Haven trailer park. So one of the challenges scenically we have to do is create a trailer. Yes, you could buy a trailer, but you have to get all those people through it, so it's not very practical to try to use a real trailer, so you have to create one. So if this is out of the back hall, if you ride the tram, you'll start seeing this take shape. It's out where Krampus was last year on the metro area of the Universal Backlot. If you go ahead and click the slide. Another place we wanted to go and show you, Chris and I, we watch all the episodes of the first two seasons, and we try to cherry pick, you know, environments that we want you guys to experience when you go through the maze. We really love the idea that Ash comes back to Elk Grove, Michigan, which is his childhood home. So kind of the cool thing about this maze is you have a facade, which is out front with the trailer park, but as you go through the first section of the maze, you come to a whole other two-story facade, and that's Ash's childhood house. Go ahead. And of course, that means we get to take you into Ash's childhood room, which of course is just rife with a million pop culture references and all these Easter eggs from the Evil Dead franchise. And of course, that means we're going to run into his sister, Cheryl. Go ahead. And then, of course, it wouldn't be Evil Dead if we didn't take you to the cabin in the woods. So we're absolutely going to take you to the cabin in the woods. You're going to run into Amanda, who Ash briefly had a crush on in the show until she died a horrible, tragic death. Go ahead. We're going to take you into the fruit cellar with all those weird hanging, are those yams or gourds? Or
those are gourds. I spent a lot of time in here the last couple of days, actually, because they're working in here, and it's going to look exactly like the show. Turned out awesome.
And one really exciting thing that at least we're really excited about, because it harkens back to the other Evil Dead films, is slide. Remember that? give you a piece of puppetry, but you will get to encounter Henrietta as you did, not only in Ash vs. Evil Dead, but also from the films as well. And that's Ash vs. Evil Dead. Okay. This would be one of them. For many, 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 many years, we've considered, but also been, frankly, kind of terrified to do The Shining. It's not an easy movie to translate into what we do. Again, when, especially when you think about the, you know, everything we do has got to be a new show every 10 seconds. So if we click the next slide, I remember there was a lot of fans who said, "Where's the key art?" when we announced the names. Here's the key art. You can finally see it. And it's either going to be video next or a fan question, so go ahead and click. Oh, it's a fan question. Go ahead. This is from Fernie Mouse, at Fernie Mouse. What is the main concept of The Shining, or in other words, what do you want fans to feel? So I'm going to ask Chris that question. What do you hope our fans will feel when they go through our maze?
Well, it's like what you were talking about, The Shining, at the beginning. In my mind, it's like, it's very hard to do this within a 5-minute walk to attraction, but a sense of dread. You know, it's trying to get some suspense. Because that's what that movie, when you watch it, is about. But it's a big, slow burn. And it really is. But that's, in my mind, what we're trying to pull through this maze and help you feel that.
And I think that's really a difference in horror movies that were made in the 70s. The Shining, of course, was 1980, so it's right in line with those films. As Chris referenced, it's a slow burn, you know. I know plenty of people who couldn't even probably watch The Exorcist. They wouldn't get past the Iraq sequence. You know, actually, I've met many of these people, you know, where I'm like, they ask me, what's your, you know, scariest movie of all time? I'm like, oh, The Exorcist. You gotta watch it. And then, you know, they can't get past the first 20 minutes. Halloween's the same way, by the way. Halloween, nothing really happens for the last 15 minutes of the movie. So it's a challenging thing to instill that sense of dread of what's coming when you're creating a live experience. But there's also a piece of video we brought that was the announcement video for Shining that I think does a good job of explaining what we're hoping you will feel when you go through this maze, so we can run the video. Elevator of Blood, and Here's Johnny, the Hedge Maze. But there's something else. Go ahead and look at the next one.
And the crazy thing Troy did when we were doing the shine, I should take pictures of this, but I didn't.
But you know the all work original playing next Jack and Goldblum. He got a big like, you know, like he would draft on paper like he would for the mazes.
It's 2 foot by 3 foot.
And just a tiny little script. By hand, he wrote that phrase thousands of times.
Yes.
By hand. You know, when I walked into the office and I was like, oh my God.
Yeah.
I don't know what to do with it. But the cool thing in the mess, the reason I mentioned Charlie is the people who aspire to do this, it is possible to, you know, literally be in the door as a performer and, you know, a few years later, he's designed my business with us. So it's pretty incredible. And yeah, that's the kind of talent that people need, the opportunity to work with. Okay, next slide. We also have, you know, room 237. Very specific architectural look to it. We put the next slide. That was me rummaging around in the maze the other day. We're kind of in the middle of finishing up scenic. We just started props, so I haven't even dressed the bed yet, but I just poked my head in room 237 and took that picture. That's the bedroom part of room 237. We put the next slide. This is the bathroom. It hasn't started props yet, but
yeah, it's just a small little sliver of what's to come, guys. You can tell we're really working incredibly hard to make this look exactly like the fella.
And of course, you know, you will see the old woman. Of course. Next slide. Another challenging thing is just to create the architecture of the overlook. This is a still film movie where Jack's cruising through the lobby. I took a couple of, one picture of some of the columns that Chris has got going on. He's on the next slide.
Yeah, you can tell. And you know what? Trying to, looking at that other image, you know, it's so big and broad and expansive. You know, it's really hard for us to pull that off within a maze, but you can see we're making big, bold columns, as well as, you know, the black and white photos from the 1920s. Even some of them are the all 1920s New Year's Eve type as well. But, you know, we're really trying to get the coloration, that terracotta color. Even at the very top with the Native American graphic band that we have throughout and wrap it around. So we're pulling it off. You guys are going to be happy with it.
Okay, next slide. And then, of course, you know, here's Johnny. When you think about it, that's a really difficult scene to be live in front of people. It's a guy chopping down a door that then has to, you know, stick his face in the door for the classic, here's Johnny Lyon. Has to reach through the door and try to get to the lock. Wendy has to slash him with the knife. So we knew we wanted to get all that action into the scene and compress it down so that we could do it. Of course, with pre-recorded audio, that means our performers are going to have to be really good at miming to the audio so that it's all done to track. But we started doing this a couple of years ago when we did the Halloween maze, where we had Dr. Lucas shooting Michael Myers. And those performers were amazing. Like every single time I went in that room, you know, they were perfectly on cue. Michael, bang, bang, bang. They would react to it perfectly. So now we have to train our performers to do the same thing with The Shining. But it still didn't solve the problem of how do you deal with this axe smashing through the door? Chris has a really good idea. I think I have a drawing for it on the next slide. There we go.
Oh, yeah, that's a concept drawing. It was illustrated by Lucas Paulshaw, but the concept, as you can see on the right side, is just a simple pivot, and it's an axe on a simple pivot that has a gusset that's coming off the back of the door itself. And the performer, John Gunstead, to the sound of the chopping, will just move this puppet forward. We have certain stops on it that it can only go so far forward. And it's a soft axe head. So, like what John said, there's really four things that's got to happen. He's got to chop, got to put his head up through the door, and he's got to reach down through, and then Wendy's going to hit his hand. So, it's in a bathroom. There's probably 10 to 12 steps before you're out of the room. So, that has got to happen all really quickly. Yeah.
And Chris mentioned this earlier, but we did the math on this years ago. If you're a performer in the scene, if you're playing Jack Torrance, you're going to do this 60,000 times. That's about the average of how many times a performer in Torrance will do whatever we want for them to do. So it's all about repetitive action that they can do over, over, and over again. Okay, next slide. Oh, oh, there's the ice. they were installing this on Friday, so I went down to play with it and monkey around it and just try to see, put myself in actor's position, which Chris and I will always do. If there's a creature or there's something that's supposed to be, you know, getting half eaten by a liger or whatever the creature is, the, you know, alien in the thing, we'll put ourselves on the table, we'll crawl in.
John, well, do that right. It depends on how it is before I crawl in something. He'll put on and it's so that, you know what, honestly, it's so that he and we have an understanding of really what our performers are kind of getting into with, you know, a certain mask, if it's small, if it's larger, or really, or you guys know we do a lot of magic illusion gags, you know, so we put performers within tables and really, you know, precarious situations. So we want to know what they're getting into as well. So
I think I'm banned from performing in our mazes now, after Halloween, because I just really wanted to think Michael Myers was not ready. Who wouldn't, you know? And it was the year we did that. Remember that scene with the beers, where there were like multiple Michael Myers? Well, one night I went down to the wardrobe, got the Michael Myers mask, he's got a costume. But then I realized I have to drive through the movie studio on the golf cart, dressed like Michael Myers, which was fun. It was a big joyride. And then, you know, park somewhere where I could sneak in to the park and somehow get to the maze without anybody seeing me. So I took the mask off and stashed it. And, you know, walked a little quick and I went backstage and I said, I'm going in. And they're like, what? I'm going in. I'm going to be Michael. I'm going to be in the final scene. So I did it for like an hour. But I figured out in that scene that if you jumped out a certain way, you could make people go in circles. I had the whole audience crawling in a circle. Okay, next one. Okay, so we're going to get into some more Q&A. This one is China related. Go ahead. Most creative things have a trial and error process. Does that apply to HHN? No, never. What are some errors and what did you learn from them? This is from Sunstone Duck Duck. Actually, yes, this does apply to the Shining. If you click the next slide, I think I brought a drawing of the great scene. We had a concept, actually, Chris's idea of how to do the Greater Twins using Pepper's Ghost illusion. But even though you have a concept, and even though we've done Pepper's Ghost a bunch, we did it in Chris's Peak, done it in a bunch of different mazes, it doesn't mean it's going to work the way that you think it is, because it's all very specific to the map and the angle of the glass to get that illusion, that ghostly figure to look like it's actually in the space you want it to look like. So we built a full-size block on this in our warehouse.
Yeah, we did. We did. We did a little R&D, and like we're the question is, you know, what, essentially we learn from our mistakes. Actually, you know, I make a learning list every year because, you know, this is not a permanent attraction. We walk away. No, we've got, you know, to follow the year. So we don't want to repeat those kind of things. Sometimes we do. But we learn and we fix those. A lot of those are based on characters and how they're performing, you know, as well as some scenic things. And here's this one about Pepper's Ghost. So, you know, we, and the way that we wanted the Pepper's Ghost is obviously we want you to see the girls, but then we want you to see them disappear and then the whole bloody scene. And that's what we're really trying to pull off. And that's how we felt that it was so important to do. Really, we built it full scale, and the drawing, that's a Troy Zimmerman drawing, in our warehouse, and we were wrong. We were wrong. So it's good that we
meaning
put this
the drawing when you saw the reflection of those girls, they weren't even in the room, they were like behind the wall.
Yeah.
And the spatial relationship was all wrong, so we had to redo it a couple of times.
Yeah, our theory on what we thought and regarding this Pepper's Ghost. And there's a couple layers to this Pepper's Ghost. It's just not making someone appear and disappear, which is very easy. There's a couple layers to this and some things to try to figure out. So basically off of that drawing, we had to retake and alter the design, as well as in the field, because we were heading down that path of construction and had to make some alterations so, you know, this things out perfectly.
Yeah. Okay, next slide. Another fan question. Go ahead. Pre-sale tickets. You guys understand what's going on right now? Is everybody in the loop with the pre-sale? Seems to be a lot of confusion on Twitter. Let me give you an example. Next slide. This is a girl who I think was talking to me. You're already on the same boat. Tired of facing emoji. LOL. But I'm so confused about who's replying to you. What's the special gift here? Christmas. I'm trying to explain for you. I'm going to explain a few ticket things because I know you guys always take questions. I never answer them on Twitter. I'm going to answer them now. We are doing an exclusive pre-sale ticket right now. General admission only. We do not eliminate front of line. Okay? Everybody on Twitter, the minute we did this, they're like, oh my God, we're taking away the front of line guys. We're doing an exclusive pre-sale. Just for the first 2 weeks of our nights, just for general admission. And if you do it, you can choose a prize, and there's several prizes to choose from if you pick your prize. That's what the pre-sale is. Everybody in the beach? Okay, next question. General tickets. Next slide. When do front of line tickets go on sale? And these are going to be frequent beer passes. Next slide. Yes. General tickets will be on sale next week, actually Tuesday. Wait, Sunday. This week. Tickets will be on sale this week. Tuesday. Front line tickets will be on sale. Yes, frequent beer passes coming back. We'll be plenty of them, buy them. They do go fast, but they will be available. And they will also be selling the midnight combo ticket. Okay. One more ticket related question. Will we have VIP tickets for Hollywood this year? How many of you guys get the VIP tour back in the day? Hasn't been around for a couple of years, right? Alright, so video. Next slide. before, but are all Scarezone's original and new this year from Ralph Chiuella. Next slide. Let's just show you. Is that cool? Scarezone. So this is the top deck. Scarezone for the part. The names are still being vetted through all the processes that have to go on to you know, secure the names of the call. You know, for years I would always put a Z after everything. That wasn't just us being cute, because I know everybody thought, you know, we're just being silly by putting it here. It's to get something trademarked. Because everything is trademarked in this day and age. Everything is. You know. So it's difficult to find names, come up with names that somebody else has trademarked for a book or a video game or a movie. So the names of these Scarezones are still being finalized, but the entry one is kind of traditional Halloween.
Yes, crazy.
We kind of wanted to go back to like that traditional Halloween look. This is the chainsaw we're getting. We'll keep blasting through these next time. Some of the mask designs for our chainsaw performers. So basically, all pumpkin headed guys. Next one. Some more in the same thing.
So, in respect to casting, Scott Kleppner, our director of casting as well, who goes, and he does all the casting. I just wanted to mention
him. Next slide, please. We also have Scarecrow Chainsaw Performers. This is a look at some of those. And this is all the first time we've been part of. Next piece. Probably blast in the past. This is the one with the teddy bear head. It was so bizarre and weird. It was in the Purge Gauntlet last year. But I just, like, every time I saw that character, I just smiled. I just thought he was just strange and creepy. So we brought him back in the Scarezone. And also a character called Bad Bunny that we had in the toy Scarezone years ago. We just have to bring back Bad Bunny. You can join the Scarezone as well. Next one. Just some more of the characters that are going to be in the top deck Scarezone. Next one. This one I really love. Just a variation on your traditional kind of Halloween guy in a white sheet. Next one. Yeah. And I think I got maybe a couple more on this Scarezone. Go ahead.
I think you're so lucky to see all this actually.
I didn't actually ask permission. I hope you weren't going to announce this separate press releases. I just decided to announce it today. So, okay. This is Stillwater on the top deck, kind of, you know, the traditional Halloween werewolf, and the skeleton one after that. Yep. And then next slide, we've got, okay, so there's the walk to the background. You know, you're actually walking through the backstage of the movie studio, basically. So there's that big tunnel you have to walk through. So Chris and I always have to come up with working with a guy named Pat Quinn, who works on our team and does a lot of work on the Scarezone and the decor in the park. We always have to come up with a theme. We're like, well, it's a tunnel. Pretty much not going to change being a tunnel. So it's got to be tunnel themed. So Pat came up with this idea, actually. It's like, as if a bunch of, you know, Con Edison workers or, you know, guys were going to do some work in a tunnel. There was a horrific gas leak that turned them all into hideous monsters. So this is just one of those looks. I think I have another one on the next slide. This one, his gas mask is like literally melted to his face. But that's kind of the look of that particular Scarezone. And then down in the Metro set, next slide, we're doing the Scarezone down there is going to be like urban hell. It's going to basically be New York City in the 1970s, essentially, because that's what New York was like. But it's going to be an urban setting, but it's going to be hell on earth. So there's all kinds of different characters which is, I think, for that Scarezone. We're changing up the way that you go through it. It's going to be a little bit more like our Gauntlet was upstairs last year, a lot more twists and turns. This is the goat-legged fellow. I forget his name.
Goat Executioner.
There we go. Next one. This is the his fellow executioner. Next one. One of our devil. This one is just like he was made of like earth that had cracked. Like everything is all, you know, like his face was made out of butter, so it's being cracked. Next one.
We were looking at this costume, actually. A lot of these costumes that you see that have a lot of tattoos and such, those are all custom costumes. built from scratch. You know, myself and Pat and John, we look at the textures that are costume people bring us as well. So, I mean, and honestly, what they do is they build one out of muslin that we can look at and see the form and then approve that. And then we will actually build the actual one. So there's a big process to this. So I know we usually don't talk a whole lot about costumes, but we have a big crew of people out in Glendale that are just cranking all these custom costumes out. So.
And the one thing I learned working with Chris all these years is that we really know shoes particularly well.
A little bit.
Are you getting hurt about those?
Yeah, we always know about stuff that I would never know. Man, no shoes.
By the way, I buy my white shoes.
Do you? Yeah. How about these shoes?
Yeah.
Do you know I haven't worn white shoes since I was a freshman in high school? And I thought they were cool in 1981. And the football team during PE took my white shoes when I was out, you know, running laps around the football field and threw them in the shower. So I had to put them on. You ever been bowling in high school? This is like the high school bowling story. But do you know that scene in Creepshow where the guy buries him up to his back and he drowns and he comes back and hears his head? I had to walk down the hall in high school. So I was late for class because my clothes were all in the shower. And I was like, so I finally got the courage to wear my shoes. Next slide. This is another Stiltwalker. This is the king of hell, basically. And then I think we have his queen. Okay. And that's going to be down in the metro center. All right. Next slide. Okay. Trivia question. Pretty good. 4 minutes to go. In my hot little hand, I have this. And it says, congratulations. Presuming you're going to actually get this right, give you a 50-50 chance on it. You are invited to experience Universal Studios Hollywood Horror at Universal Studios Hollywood with 2 complimentary frontline tickets to the event and an exclusive behind-the-scenes main tour with the creators of Hollywood Horror. Somebody's going to win this, I hope. If you don't get this right, I'm going to tear it into little pieces, and no one wins it.
It's tough.
It's really hard. The way we're going to do this is I'm going to read the question, and then I'm going to pick somebody. Nobody shout it out, because if you shout it out, I'm going to tear it into little pieces, and nobody's going to get it, okay? It's going to be a Shining-related trivia question. It is tough, okay? Next slide. Do you all know who this guy is? This is Mr. Grady. He was the former caretaker of the Overlook Hotel in The Shining. Ready? Okay. Let's go. Question. In The Shining, the former character of the Overlook Hotel, Mr. Grady, is mysteriously referred to by 2 different first names. What are they? Now, there's somebody way in the back right there. Your hand is up. I saw you first. Stand up. Tell me the 2 first names of Mr. Grady. You are absolutely right. Oh. 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 Oh.
That was awesome.
Okay. I honestly didn't think anybody was going to get that right. That's incredible. Congratulations. Congratulations. We'll see you later at Halloween Horror Nights 2017. We'll give you a lot of seats here. Let's see. What I wanted to say also is thank you guys so much for supporting us today. Supporting all of our fans. It means the world to us. We're very lucky to have such dedicated, passionate fans. Chris and I have a couple of interviews out in front of the lobby, but we'll hang out. If anybody wants to say hi, we are more than welcome to do whatever you require within minutes. Okay? Thank you very much.
Well, the end of another very long episode has come. You made it. Congratulations. Your prize is I'm going to give you our email address. It's creepykingdom@gmail.com. If you would like to contact us, that's how you do it. And for show notes, links to our articles, videos, social media links, all that fun stuff, just go to creepykingdom.com. Don't forget creepytour.com, Orlando, September 19th to the 26th. Don't forget the Patreon page for awesome rewards, perks, or whatever they call them coming soon on there. So much awesome stuff. It's coming your way. Get ready for it. Good times. Totally awesome. Right on. So until next time.
I have a girl now. It's midnight. Pleasant dreams.